Hello, welcome to our show. This is Universal Soul Love with Lana Love.
And David Love.
Welcome to our show. Today we're going to be dealing with a really important topic, resilience.
And how that relates to stress in our daily lives and in the world and how we cope with that and the management techniques and different ideas around that and how we can stay resilient and what that means.
David and I thought that this would be a really useful topic to deal with today because life is so stressful. Sometimes I don't know why life is so stressful. And it's not just me, everyone I talk to has stress. And we seem to have more stress today than we did many, many years ago. Don't you think, David?
Seems like that to me. It just seems like life is just exploding. I mean, everything's so fast-paced and nonstop, and it seems like almost like technology was meant to make our lives easier, and it's actually complicated things beyond anything I ever imagined, actually.
Absolutely. When I was thinking about why we're so stressed in this world, and, you know, a post-industrialized society, we have modern luxuries, you know, where, you know, a lot of us live in countries where there's no war, we should be happy and relaxing. We have dishwashers, we have washing machines, we have vacuum cleaners, even a robot vacuum cleaners. David, we should be able to sit back, put our feet up, and enjoy what's happening.
Well, I wish I knew, but I guess that's what we're here to talk about.
So, I mean, obviously, there's the stresses in the modern world still of, you know, money, financial stresses, relationships, all of those things. But I think also we have an overwhelming amount of information. So I think often we're going on information overload.
Which leads to overstress.
Absolutely. If you just look at the amount of mail I get in my mailbox, I just want to throw it all out to the postman. I can't get through all that mail.
There's an idea. You deal with it. I'm not dealing with it.
So that's why we thought we could do a program on resilience, how to deal with the stress of modern life. So first of all, it might be worthwhile looking at what resilience is.
Maybe we can give a definition of resilience.
Why not? So I would define resilience as that quality or trait that someone has that makes them un-knock-a-downable, or not makes it impossible to knock someone down. And I guess the image I have in my mind is one of those Russian Matryoshka dolls that have, you know, they're made of wood, but they've got a heavier, or is it not Matryoshka? They're similar to the Matryoshka ones, do you know? But they're ones that they've got something heavy in the bottom, and you try to push it from the top and it just bounces back up.
Okay, sure.
Vankostanka. In Russian, Vankostanka means, Vanka is the name, Vanya. Stanka is get up again.
It means like weeble wobbles, but they don't fall down. It's sort of like you get knocked, the other, isn't that you're going to not get knocked down. It might be that you get knocked down, but you can get back up on your horse after you've been thrown off and finish the race, as they say.
Exactly. With resilience, throw out the concept that you're not going to get stressed. You are going to get. Life is going to throw dung at you.
The tests and challenges.
Absolutely shit at you, if I'm allowed to say that in the program. So the true test of resilience is how quickly you get up.
Okay. And what's your definition?
So, well, that quality of not being able to be knocked down, as I said, un-knock-down-ability. There you are, a new word.
Unstoppable.
Unstoppable is another word that could describe it, but quite often we are stopped. Quite often we crash down. Okay. The ability to get up again, the ability to still have a reasonable quality of life despite what happens, that's how I would define resilience. What about you, David?
Well, I talk a lot about the spiritual warrior and what that means, and I know we advertised at the last minute as we do because one of the stressors is trying to prepare for the show.
The show is a great stressor.
We were supposed to have Lynn Rose and Bob Doyle today, and we're going to actually maybe pre-record that for next week because we decided that we needed to be flexible because they have a lot going on, and so do we, and we don't want to rush things. That's one of the things is taking control, and that's what a spiritual warrior does. It's that I use the serenity prayer, which basically means accepting the things that you can't change, changing the things in a positive way that you can, those things outside of you, and the wisdom to know the difference between the two, what you can change and what you can't.
So the wisdom to know what you can change, what you can't, and the ability to be active when you should and to be cool as a cucumber. Yeah.
And that has to do with my famous standing in the center of your power and always going back to your center, your inner power, and being balanced in your mind and your heart and keeping a balanced mind between the intellect and the emotion is that yin and yang, so that you're very flexible in the way you handle things outside of yourself that are coming at you. That's the spiritual warrior's creed.
So let's see, that means that what we're looking at is not just being strong, but being flexible.
Mm.
So the image that comes to my mind is sort of like the image of a rubber band. I mean, not the most powerful thing in the world, but you can shoot it and it can bounce back. It's got that bounceability.
When you take I think I wrote this in my last book, when you take an elastic band, it doesn't do much, but when you give it work and you put it to use, you stretch it, and then it has tension and stress, and it's useful for wrapping around things and holding things together. If you give it over stress and you pull it too hard, it's going to snap, which is what often happens to us in life when we get disease and mental disease, and we end up in psychiatric institutions or maybe in prison for violent crimes that we've committed. Some people, as I've dealt with as a criminal investigator, I know these things. From my experience, what leads to people ending up in these places. And we don't want that. We want to remain in society. We want to deal with what's being thrown at us. And so we do that the way I've done that in my life is by developing a number of life management skills or coping techniques. And I know you know a lot of these as a psychotherapist.
Yes, I mean, that's what I do all the time. I basically try to help people be resilient. And, of course, being resilient allows you to have that quality of life. You know, David, a favorite saying of mine is, it's not what happens to you, it's what you do with it.
That's true.
And that sums up resilience, I think.
It is. And we know that a lot of this, all our experiences are happening within our minds. And so what you do with it is what you do with it in your mind. And that has to do with, I did this with meditation and with mindfulness meditation by becoming an independent observer of my thoughts and feelings, and rather than labeling them this is just one technique, and knowing what the truth is about where those thoughts are coming from and what's behind them and those feelings and what to do with them, rather than using those thoughts and feelings and reacting to those thoughts and feelings and responding to them in a more positive way and dealing with them, even those things that we perceive as negative. This is all about duality, about labeling things and giving meaning to the things outside of us, our experiences, so that we're can become resilient that way by managing these experiences within our minds.
Absolutely. So what you're saying, David, is it's got a lot to do with our mind and being able to manage our mind.
Mind control, self-mind control.
But also insight, actually the ability to be able to see yourself, that being able to have that objective observer.
Mm.
With my patients, I quite often get a second chair and get them to almost imagine that they're sitting in two chairs. In the first chair, it's sort of like the driver's seat of life. You go ahead, you feel all these things. The second seat, you're able to take another part of you, sit in that second seat, observe yourself as a non-critical, as a gentle, kind, dispassionate observer, and have that ability to see what's going on. Because unless you know what's going on, you don't know what to do and how to handle it.
That's right.
So, yes, I think being able to have that mental, I guess, life where you understand what's happening
clarity.
Is really important. Clarity, wisdom.
And that has to do with discernment, discerning the truth. Discerning the truth, getting the clearest possible picture of what's happening outside of you and also what's happening within you as a result of those things, that are those outside influences. So that's as above, so below, as within, so without, because what's happening inside of you is happening outside of you, and things that are happening outside of you are affecting what's happening inside of you. So, and this is all consciousness, of course, at the source.
Okay, now, David, I'm going to ask you something. I'm just going to be the devil's advocate here.
Oh, wonderful. My favorite role.
When we talk, and you've just talked about clarity of mind being so important, and I've just said it is. However, I wonder if it's possible to have too much clarity. They say that some of the wisest, most intelligent people get very depressed because they see the world for what it is. They are aware of all the environmental catastrophes. They are aware of the, what sort of problems happen or could happen. So I wonder whether it's better not to have 100% clarity, but maybe 80 or 90% clarity.
Well, let's just,
what do you
first
think?
Of all, we're talking about objective reality as opposed to subjective. And that means being objective means, again, about non-duality. And so rather than labeling all of these things that we see as the truth, we're labeling them, sometimes we may be labeling them as negative. And maybe that's not negative. Maybe, as we develop our philosophy of life and we look at things more as a learning experience and the lessons that we're going to get out of things, that's how I've dealt with this. The things that are going on in the world, we may not be able to change them, and maybe it's not negative. Maybe now we're getting into deeper philosophy, I think.
Okay.
And, beliefs, personal belief systems.
So what you're saying, David, it's not just being able to see things clearly, but it's the attitude you have towards them, whether you label them or not. So it's not just vision, it's what you do with that vision.
And I know I've seen this with some of our activist friends who see all the horrible things going on in the world with animals, killing off the poachers, killing off the last rhinos and lions. We have friends that are very active in trying to save them, and I applaud them for that and praise them and admire them. But I also see in our groups how people become very negative about that, and they say, I hate humanity and I hate myself as a result of that. And it makes it very difficult to be an activist, a social activist, or any kind of person who's engaged in trying to make positive change in the world when you take that on in such a personal way that you become cynical and you hate the world and you hate humanity for what you're seeing. And I've done this myself throughout my career as an investigator and dealing with people's emotions and dealing with their behavior. And I still do that from time to time. It gets overwhelming when you can't change something, when you see a situation where someone's suffering or an animal's suffering and in pain and being killed. It's very difficult to deal with that. It's very difficult for activists. It's very different from being the guru on the mountain alone. It's much harder to be in society and deal with the situations that we're dealing with, these challenges. And so we have to be careful of our interpretation and our perception of the experiences that we're seeing in our minds that are happening, that we believe are happening outside of ourselves.
Okay, so you just mentioned, David, what I can see is you're mentioning sort of, well, there's two factors. One is that you don't have to take it too seriously. It's important to be able to accept that bad things do happen, that that's the nature of life. So, for example, as an animal activist, if you get too upset by what's happening, you can crumble. So are you saying that the ability to accept non-duality, which is sort of like that the things can be bad and good at the same time, that not necessarily labeling everything, you're saying that quality is important?
I do. I think, I see that you often put out these videos of animals being imprisoned and
yes,
sometimes tortured. And I know what's going on myself. And I know the truth as it is that, an animal is being killed. I see that and I see them in your posts. I actually can't look at those. And I know a lot of people can't. You're trying to just show people that this is what's happening so that maybe they'll develop some compassion and maybe want to do something about it. And at the same time, we're not trying to put it in people's faces and make them feel guilty and make them feel disempowered by it. Like, oh, I can't do anything. It's too horrible to look at. You know, it's about going in and facing the darkness. And we want to be empowered to do something without, and realizing that we, trying to realize what we can do and what we can't do, and taking on that which we can and making the smallest changes that we can and contribute positively to the world and to the situations that we want to and that we're able to. Maybe if you're an animal rights activist, I am myself. I don't do what you do. I try to do it in other ways.
I guess the posts I put out, I don't think that many of them are negative. And I guess, you know, I myself have a lot of difficulty watching, you know, like a cow being slaughtered. It's awful. So I guess the quality there is an acceptance that bad stuff will happen. That's non-duality, is it, do you think? Or acceptance that life will have its the positive and negative stuff, and that you can't do, you can't completely eliminate suffering. You have to accept that.
No.
But then doing what you can.
No, you do put out those posts, and you put out the ones that you do. I'm here. We're here talking about it now. I'm doing my part. I often sign petitions when they come to me, and I do many other things as you do, and we do them together. You know,
you think I put out posts that are more violent, or, you know, showing cows that are slaughtered? I don't...
Well, some people, it does, you know... The message gets out, and it helps people in different ways, and people get the messages in different ways. That's one way to do it, and there are many ways to do it.
And different people have a different resilience to seeing. Basically, what you're saying is that a certain acceptance of bad things goes a long way to being resilient. You're also saying that in order to be some activist or do good in the world, we have to protect ourselves from being hurt from too much pain, that's a reasonable thing.
It is, and I'm not saying we both know in our own lives that's not easy, and we often get knocked down. Maybe every day I think we get knocked down at least to a certain extent, or maybe the right way of saying it is knocked down. But we continue on, we get back on our horse, and we keep going. And
so a certain
emotional endurance and...
So a certain amount of protecting yourself from pain is important, but then pain will always come, so the ability to get up when you've been knocked down is also really
important. Let's look at you taught me as a Buddhist a lot about, I knew from mysticism and from being a Rosicrucian from my studies about time and always being in the present moment and being in the now and realizing that time is a concept. And you also taught me about impermanence and the temporariness of life and the idea of non-attachment. And it goes well with mysticism and a lot of the universal laws and concepts that I know of and theories.
Okay, so that goes back to that wisdom in a non-duality, understanding impermanence, and maybe just understanding the nature of the world so that you don't take it so seriously, so that you that allows you to be a bit more objective and more at peace.
Life is hard, but it's not that serious. That's
I like that.
That sort of goes with the serenity prayer, or relax, it's only life. You know. yes, we do need to deal with things in a positive way, and we need to deal with them effectively and efficiently, and we need to be intelligent about how we do things and use our moral intelligence and all these things rolled into one, and trying to do as best as we can. That's the as best we can philosophy, knowing that we're doing the best we can and that we can't control everything outside of ourselves, and that we do what we can.
So I like that as well, as best we can, or another very similar expression would be good enough.
Good enough.
That you're doing a good enough job. In so the things that you can change, the things that you can do, not expecting perfection, but just doing good enough.
And I think that goes along with my philosophy of just the pursuit of perfection, or the process of perfection, and knowing that we're striving to do our best and be at our best, knowing that perfection is in the mind and it's a concept, and it's an interpretation of the things outside of ourselves. Once again, another situation. And some people will think that something is perfect, and they'll have a different concept of what perfection is. Perfection is just something in the moment, and it's an interpretation. And good enough means this is my idea of perfection. Just like,
yeah, look, I think perfection sucks. I mean, I think you know, so many people expect themselves to be perfect, especially women nowadays. You know, the image of having to look good and have a, you know, ridiculously fantastic flat tummy and being able to have their career and manage their children. And the further, if that's not enough, expecting yourself to be able to do all of that without any failures is absolutely ridiculous. And it just... that in itself is stressful. So what you're saying is being able to accept imperfection, being able to accept good enough, is really important in life.
Perfectly imperfect. And most of our struggles tend to be around other people and trying to get other people to do what we want, our partners, our romantic partners, and people in our personal relationships, people that we work with, and knowing that you can't control that person and get them to do what you want to do. And with our partners, we came up with the idea of good enough partner, good enough romantic partner, or whatever.
Which is very different from twin flame soulmate, but exactly the same thing, though, really. Yeah. It's realizing that perfect ideal is never going to be perfect. It's going to be good enough, a good enough soulmate, good enough twin soul. I like that.
Right, and so... it means that you're going to strive for perfection. You're going to strive to get your ideal. And at some point, even in writing a book, you're finished. You finished that book, and that is where it ends. And you're going to go on and do something new. Perfection has its end, I think, where you say, this is good enough. Now I'm going to move on to the next thing. And
a lot of people find it hard to get to that point. Mm. And I know with my patients, I spend a lot of time getting them to accept good enough. So many of my patients have had critical, overbearing parents that have absolutely insisted that their children do things just the right way. And now, as adults, they struggle with just letting go.
Okay, well, let's go back to the idea of impermanence and non-attachment, which is one of your special, you know...
Okay, and what would you like to do with that, David?
Well, let's talk about... What does it mean? What does impermanence mean? Is that a Buddhist concept?
Or? Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
So, I mean, is it a Buddhist concept? It's really just the truth about life. Uh-huh. Life is impermanent. But most of us can't accept that, me, myself included. It's really hard to realize that your life will be over in 20, 30 years' time.
Very good.
However, in moments of stress... when awful things happen or when really difficult things happen, knowing that you'll be dead in 30, 40 years is actually quite comforting because it won't matter.
No, because life is I like to think of death as almost being our greatest teacher. Once we've come to grips with our physical mortality, that our body will die in at least in 100 years usually. But our soul, we need to accept that there is an afterlife. And I've experienced this in spiritualism and in hospice and working with patients and in mediumship. And I have faith that I have an eternal soul, that I am a spirit in my body, and that my soul will continue on. And I've had out-of-body experiences, and I've seen things. I've seen that non-ordinary reality, that separate reality. And for me, I accept that there is an afterlife. And because of that, I know that this life is temporary, and that change is a constant, that our circumstances will change every single moment. And there is no moment because it's a continuum. And life is a continuum that goes off into infinity, just like duality is an interpretation along that.
Yeah, things are forever changing. I know something I always remember my mother used to tell me was King Solomon's ring, where apparently on his ring it said, "This too will pass." And while that can be sad if you're in a great time of happiness in your life, if you're in a dreadful time when you're stressed or bereaved or whatever, knowing that this will pass is very comforting.
King Solomon was a wise man.
He
was. He certainly was, and I certainly could say a lot about King Solomon. going all the way back to King Solomon's temple and the Knight Templars and goes into many conspiracy theories, but nonetheless,
so going back,
we're not going to go there.
So that wisdom, that ability to see the world clearly, and in Buddhism, the concept of impermanence is there not only to actually see the world for what it is, but to help you cope with it. So let's look at what else. And you know, in terms of personality, non-attachment,
that goes very well with the idea, the concept of eternal life and
yes, so that's
temporariness of life. And
so that's a difficult concept, which I've struggled with before when I was younger. I think I get it more now. So non-attachment doesn't mean you're not attached. It doesn't mean that you're cold and distant with people. What it means is that you love or you have relationships and you treasure them, but you have in mind that they too will pass. And what that does, I believe, it allows you to love in a more meaningful way, in a less selfish way, because you know that it's something temporary. It allows you to love more and, you know, not be irritated by little things, but it allows you to let go when things do change.
Letting go.
And look, a good example of that might be, for example, if you've been in a marriage for many years and partners, you know, grow in different directions, the ability to let a relationship go because you need to go, you know, in a different direction, that's not attachment. The ability to be a mother to an adolescent girl, which my girl is 15 at the moment, and she doesn't want to be mollycuddled anymore. She doesn't want to be mum's little girl, and that's very difficult. She is growing up, and here the love, the quality of love and relationship I have with her is undergoing change. So instead of grieving the loss of my little girl in a, you know, being resilient, a resilient attitude would be to keep that love but recognize the quality is different and allow yourself to flow along with that, not resist it. So that's
going with the flow.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly. And I think that's one of the best ways of describing non-attachment, going with the flow.
And this might also have to do with trying to control things and people outside of you and situations outside of you, and the idea that we can't own or possess anything, or we can't possess people. And it may challenge the idea of marriage contracts and until death do you part, because you can promise somebody that you can be somewhere, that you'll be with them forever, but you can't guarantee that just because life is full of change in every moment. And you may not, you can say, yes, I will be here with you forever. That may not be true. You may be taken away for whatever reason, or maybe your decision, or maybe your partner's decision that 20 years from now, you know, this, we're not happy. And when you
that's
come, you know,
a tricky one, David. And yeah, I deal
it is.
With,
there is a commitment.
I deal with so many people that are in relationship problems, and you know, more rarely I do meet people who are in very happy relationships, but very often people are not happy. It's a tricky one because you're talking about balancing the values of faithfulness and loyalty and really giving to another person. You have to balance that together with respect for your own sovereignty and not in a superficial but in a very deep way, being able to meet your own needs and move if you need to move in a different direction.
And knowing that because we could die at any moment for any reason or be taken away from this world or just taken away from another person or a situation or a job, or we can't possess, that the idea of possession or ownership is just another concept. Just like in war, we say, this is my line, this is my international boundary line. You can't step over that line. This is what I own. This is my land. This is my house. This is my tree. These are my possessions. These are my people. That's not true, because you can be taken away from those things by some unseen circumstance or force, just as anything can be taken away from you or you from it, by acts of God or by a superior army or whatever. those borders and those lines that you say don't cross because this is mine are not true. They're concepts.
Oh, they're all artificial. I mean, the earth doesn't belong to any country, does it?
No.
Absolutely.
All contracts are human design.
Absolutely.
Marriage contracts,
real estate
contracts.
But I think they are important. I think they're important for people to, you know, allow them to create an attachment. So that's different.
Attachments are important.
So attachment is a relationship. That's different from the concept of non-attachment. Mm-hmm. So, and paradoxically, non-attachment allows you to give more love to your attachment, to your relationship, than not, because you're really focusing on what's important. It's funny, David, when you were describing all of that, what struck me was the fact that in life we do things, you know, back to front, completely the wrong way. We struggle to try to control our environment, people around us, and which we can't control. Mm. We don't pay attention to our mind, which we can control.
True.
It's really ridiculous.
And so I guess we've gone over a lot of these ideas that we actually kind of advertised about. I think that we also want to talk about keeping up a winning attitude and overcoming adversity. We want to talk about self-love, and we want to talk about higher powers. And
so we've got lots more to talk about. We could go on for hours. But maybe, should we take
a
music break very soon? And then we'll talk about all of those concepts.
Maybe some life coping skills or management techniques, and maybe we'll just...
We also want to talk about...
Taking a few calls.
If anyone wants to ring in with any questions or anything that they'd like to say, we'd love to hear from you. Hello and welcome back to Universal Soul Love. You're listening to
David Love
and Lana Love. And today we're talking about resilience, the ability to lead a life where you can bounce back from stress. So we were going to talk about being positive. Tell us about that, David.
Okay. I like to think of, I guess this sort of goes back to the Middle Ages and talking about almost, maybe this is probably a King Solomon technique of mind control, mind mastery skills, Rosicrucian techniques that go way back to ancient mystery school philosophy of learning to transform something into something else, knowing that it's all, this goes back to physics.
Is it alchemy?
Alchemy, yes, the optical process, transforming lead into gold, something more valuable, or that what we believe to be valuable, because we give value to things, we give that meaning to things outside of us, and that's the alchemical process. You think gold is valuable. It's useful for a system of exchange because of its scarceness, whereas lead, we don't often find that as valuable, even though it might be valuable to someone else.
So, David, do you think we can use the word alchemy to describe not only transforming substances, metals, one metal into another, but also transforming one emotion, one event,
thoughts,
one
and
experience
feelings
into another experience? Can we use the word alchemy for that?
Or we can.
Because, transmutation?
Sure, because this is about duality. Duality is all about the idea of labeling things, labeling those experiences outside of us as positive or negative. We give them, we may say ugly, beautiful, fast, slow, big, tall, difficult, easy.
And some would say that in reality, the qualities are only ascribed by us. There's no such thing as a good or bad experience.
No.
There's just the experience.
It's like in days long ago, they used to look at snakes and say snakes are evil, like the serpent in the Garden of Eden was considered Satan, and snakes themselves or anything like that, they don't consider themselves evil. They're just being snakes and doing what snakes do and trying to get their needs met. And I like to refer back to Maslow and his hierarchy of needs pyramid and how we're trying to get food, water, shelter, clothing. We're trying to maintain our standard of living, and so we give meaning to things and we say, this is good, fire is good, or it's bad, depending on how it affects us and how things affect us.
So if you stand back and stop judging and be able to just experience life as it is without the judgments, you can in fact transform something which you're experiencing as painful into something which is neutral. In fact, could you make it into something which is useful?
If you have a bad experience, I like to do the personal growth philosophy, the self-improvement thing, and I like to look at some, I like to look at a situation and say, okay, I feel that this is affecting me negatively, and I look at the situation and say, or even afterwards, perhaps, after I've been through it, and say, it was certainly seemed like a negative experience, but what did I get out of that, and what did it do for me, and what can I do with that now, and how can I use that to my advantage or for other people's?
That's such a good point.
And it doesn't always work, but you've got to maintain that balanced mind in order to do that as much as possible.
That's a good point, and I'm sure that those people that do well and are optimistic always look for the silver lining in every cloud.
Yeah, because we used to fall back on the law of attraction and say, okay, if I only think positive thoughts, I'll only attract positive things into my life. Well, is that true? If you're walking down the street and somebody, and you're being Mr. Optimism, and somebody hits you in the head with a baseball bat out of nowhere, that's a negative experience, it would seem like. That's not positive. Obviously, I'm
being... unless you're dealing with the enemies of that person.
Maybe from that person's perspective, yes. Maybe that was a positive thing. I don't know.
What
that's human behavior.
One man's meat is another man's poison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do we do with this when that happens? You know, our optimism just got knocked out by a baseball bat. And that does happen quite a bit, at least where I, you know, in my experience in criminal matters. And how do you deal with that, the trauma of that? Because we have all experienced trauma at least one point in our lives with our partners, or we maybe every day they have the weak skull doctrine, the thin skull doctrine, which means some people take stress better than others, and some people take these things that we look at as traumatic events better than others, and they're able to deal with life better and cope better, and some people have more trouble than others. And it's so being the spiritual warrior, we're working with ourselves and we're working with people and things outside of ourselves at the same time. So this alchemical process of independently observing our thoughts and feelings and working with that and figuring out what we can do with those to help ourselves and others is a really useful concept, I think, and it's a really useful practice.
Absolutely, absolutely. And look, I know I've met quite a lot of people who've been able to transform something negative into something positive. In fact, it's actually quite a fun exercise. I'd like to challenge all our listeners out there, next time you meet something bad happens to you, why don't you just for the heck of it turn it into something good? In fact, the very reason we're doing this program, I was so super stressed a few days ago with everything that was happening in my life, and that's when I suggested to you, Dave, that we do something on resilience.
Mm.
And look what's come out of it. We've got a program about
it. We do. Oftentimes, you know, we tend to take things out on our partners when there's no one else around, and we don't often know why. The person that's being angry doesn't always know why they're angry, and so certainly your partner or your family members or your friends don't know why you're being angry either, or why you're acting a certain way, so
everyone gets stressed.
We have to see what's going on in our minds, and then we can look at the things outside of us and what the people are doing outside of us and how they're influencing us, and then we can, once we understand ourselves and our own nature, we can look at the behavior of other people and the situations and maybe have compassion, empathy for them, and see what's motivating them and why they're acting a certain way. And it may not be about us. It may be things going on in their lives totally unrelated to what's happening to us. It may be that the person attacking you has some motivation. That doesn't mean it's okay or that you tolerate those things. So the spiritual warrior doesn't tolerate abuse or oppression or injustice or unfairness. But, you know, in my career, I've learned to see what motivates people through nonverbal behavior and through examining myself, and because most language is nonverbal, it's body language and there's emotional content. You have to look at all those things and see why people are doing what they're doing so that you can work with them better, even with your partner.
So David, what you're saying is that part of resilience is not only being able to, deal with your own stress, but and objectively look at yourself, but being able to objectively look at your partner or your friends when they're stressed or they're angry at you and realize that they might not be angry at you, but that they might be really stressing out.
Right.
And that in itself can diffuse a lot of quarrels, perhaps, and misunderstandings.
And maybe this goes back to the self. Remember, we've talked a lot about the self, the Buddhist idea of the self and our essence, and that the self, I don't know if I'm jumping mm-hmm. too quickly, but the self has no, it has, you know.
Self.
Yeah,
the self
nothing.
Is the concept.
Yeah.
In Buddhism, they actually talk about no self, which is something which
right.
baffles a lot of people.
Yeah.
But the idea is that, you know, our concept of the self as being something very stable and impermanent just doesn't exist. Our moods change, our thoughts change, we go from being young to being old. So if you accept the fact that you are not permanent, that you're forever changing, you might not find that you can get hurt as much, because you need a self to be able to be hurt. And if you realize that really the self is more of a concept rather than it doesn't really exist, well, you can't be hurt as much.
No, and then you can start, you realize that you're the one giving meaning to the world and to the experiences outside of you, and you're able better to handle those things and understand people better and their behavior and know what to take on and what not to take on, knowing that you are self and that you are creating those labels and interpreting those things and perceiving those things and giving meaning to things, and you're bringing that into yourself, and that, you know, you don't have to accept the negativity, but you can realize that even love, when you're looking for love in other people, the love that you see in the world and the love that you see outside yourself and the love that you believe you feel from other people, love is a feeling and happiness is a feeling that's inside of you and that you're generating. And all the love in the world and all the love for the animals and the people and the beauty of the world, that's inside of you. All love is self-love, and that's the self. And the self chooses love. And so you can have love over hatred and anger if you choose to. That's the power of choice.
So what we're saying here is that it's all in the mind, that love is more of a state of mind rather than something that you're dependent on for other people.
Mm.
So it's actually something that you are experiencing. Other people might trigger it, but it's something you have inside. So there's this idea that if you realize that, and if you can allow those traits, those feelings to become stronger, and if you can understand your own sovereignty, you never actually have to be broken by a failed relationship or grief at the loss of someone, because that love is within you.
That's right.
Taking one step further to totally confuse everybody, mm-hmm. which happens because you're a mystic and I'm a Buddhist, taking it further, when you realize that you are a sovereign being,
everything
and just
change.
When you realize that, we go and a Buddhist master would knock that down and say, but the self actually doesn't exist. So while you can be a sovereign being, taking it further, even the self doesn't exist.
We are awareness, and we're part of the
That's
consciousness
right.
of all things. We are part of the collective consciousness, and
That's
we're
right.
a drop in the
That's
ocean of water.
Essence.
Our identity is part of that ocean of consciousness of the universe. And so
we are everything.
We are. Well, everything is within us. Everything that is outside of us is within us. We are the I am. The I am all in all. The God within, the Buddha within. And that's how you end up connecting with your higher power for guidance. And it's really empowering to have that guidance, those higher levels.
But in fact, having a connection with a higher power is, I think, another really important ingredient to resilience. I sort of, you know, Dave, when I think about resilience, I'm getting this really interesting symbol of resilience, this human, this little figure standing, and the connection to the earth is important, your ability to have good food, good health, you know, finances, all of that, that's your connection with the earth. Then you can imagine that figure raising its arms to the skies, and that
yes.
connection with a higher power, with infinity, with all of those things that you talk about that gives us inspiration, that's the other part of resilience.
Like a tree has long roots that go into the ground and hold it there into the ground, and it reaches up into the sky and up into the universe.
And we need both. Both of those poles, I think, are really important for resilience and for quality of life.
And I guess I was just thinking back to, oftentimes this goes back to fear and love, and we can choose fear or love. And it, I just want to mention, it goes back to accepting our mortality and our eternal soul, knowing that once we've gone past, and this is, I think this is really important, any personal belief system, that we accept that, the idea that we will go on, and that time is infinite, and that our soul is infinite and eternal, because that way, when we know, because the biggest fear of all is the fear of death, and once we overcome that, we understand ourselves, when we understand our own nature, and we understand non-self, things in life are not that serious, because we know we will go on. And so these things that we perceive as being negative and traumatic, you're going to get through it, and you're going to reach the finish line, as Paul the Apostle would say. You know, you kept up the good fight, you kept the faith, and you finished the race, and we all have to know that we're going to be okay in the end. And
I like that, David, the idea that dying is actually not a failure, but it's making it to the finishing line.
It's the continuity, and it's going beyond that, because it's the continuity of life, and knowing that if there's war and pestilence and climactic change or whatever it is, you're going to get through it. We all will. It doesn't matter what happens. It does matter in the moment, but have a greater perspective and know that you'll get through life.
And so if I can say, it does matter and it doesn't matter at the same time.
Yes, life is a paradox.
It is.
It really is. And life is and we are complex beings, and things happen on many levels with us. We don't often know our subconscious mind, most of us, even me or you, or anyone, any master, or any knowledgeable person. And we all have the capability of having the Buddha within and being wise people. We're all teachers and students of life for each other, as I like to say. Could we maybe take a call, do you think? Are you ready for that?
Well, if there are any calls, that'd be lovely.
The number is, I guess I no longer.
We don't have the number?
Well, we did, but
all right.
Such is life.
Well, maybe someone can clairvoyantly ask us questions.
Or they can possibly get the number off the BBS Radio website, bbsradio.com, and maybe you can call in. And if not, we'll just we'd like to take maybe a couple of situations and see if we can problem solve, as we like to be problem solvers.
All right, so if anyone would like to ask us questions or add something, if you can just perhaps email BBS Radio or phone them up on their website. Now, the other thing I wanted to talk about was humor, because I think having a sense of humor is really important to get through life, don't you think?
Yes.
Being able to laugh at things, you know, being able to see the whole situation is really silly, and that's part of not taking yourself seriously.
They say laughter is the best medicine, and I think it's the best medicine for all things, for stress even. Maybe it's just, stress, they say, causes all kinds of disease, so maybe it's just a life skill. You know, they have laughter groups.
They do, actually, yeah. I know that they did a study on medically ill patients, and those that were watching comedies nonstop actually did so much better. So hope you don't run out of jokes ever, but I guess comedy is that disposition where you don't take it too seriously. So, you've got the number. Okay, David, do you want to?
So the call-in number, if we only have probably about 5 minutes left of the show, I think. The call-in number is, in America, 888-627-6008. And we've never taken any call-ins on the show before, but we thought, because of the nature of this show, the topic, we thought we'd try that. If not this time, next time we'll probably stay on this, I think, because it's so pertinent, the ideas that we're
and it's a huge concept. You know, if you're more resilient, you just get so much more in life. David, I wanted to talk about the difference in the genders, because that's something that comes up a lot for me. I get my it's mainly women that come to see me, and they're always complaining about the fact that their husbands tend not to talk, they tend to be stoic and withdrawn, whereas women tend to want to talk about problems and things. So, David, what do you think, men and women cope differently with
stress? I'm laughing already, because, I've never come across this, you know, adultery and child support and child custody.
No, but dealing differently with stress. Do you think men deal differently with stress than the women?
I do see that. I see that, you know, even in our own relationship.
But you like talking. You actually like talking.
I guess.
But a lot of men don't. Not all men. A lot of men tend to somehow not want to talk about an issue, but just deal with it themselves, or actually even forget about it. And
maybe men tend to be, as I say, I think of myself as a problem solver, and I think many men think of themselves as, you know, that emotions are typically very much more difficult to deal with than practical, coming up with
solution-based. Yeah, sometimes men have no idea about their feelings.
Yeah, we like to know how to fix things. We want to know how, you know, a woman would come to us with a problem and we'd say, what do you want me to do about it? And then what I'm hearing is, you want me to listen to it?
Yes.
And we don't understand. A lot of us just don't understand listening
because
it doesn't resolve the situation. And so I feel that maybe the situation is going to keep coming up and coming up and coming up until it's resolved, because listening to it isn't necessarily, maybe it is resolving it. I don't know. I see this in talk therapy, and I've seen people go through talk therapy for 10 years and continue to have the problem. And so for me being in, you know, working in therapy or something, I'd like to see a technique to resolve it, you know.
So that's a very masculine approach, and I'll counter what you just said by saying I have a lot of people going through therapy who are very much helped by talking therapy, because you see, talking, listening, first of all, someone is there to observe you. That in itself is...
Oh, we're almost done. I'm sorry. I don't mean to cut you off.
Oh, okay.
We've got about 30 seconds. So.
30 seconds. Oh, well, we'll have to continue this next time, perhaps.
Great conversation. Okay, well, we're going to have Lynn Rose and Bob Doyle coming up, and perhaps in December we might have Arielle Ford. So thank you very much for listening in.
And we're wishing you all a very resilient week, and please... take the challenge. If something bad happens over the next 24 hours, try to turn it around. That's it for now.
We'll see you next time on
Universal Soul Love.